Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You just need a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, or it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from NHK Japan, France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with NHK World Radio Japan. Torrential rains have continued in South and Southeast Asia, destroying land and 1,400 people. Major Japanese companies have filed lawsuits over Trump's new tariffs. The Chinese and French presidents met in China, saying that they should support each other's core interests. Ukraine attacked 2 Russian oil tankers in the Black Sea, causing a large fire and much pollution off the Turkish coast. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute released a report on the 100 largest arms producers, whose revenues increased to a new record of $679 billion in 2024. Half of those sales went to U.S. weapon manufacturers. NHK Japan.
Torrential rains across South and Southeast Asia have triggered vast damage over wide areas. Lives have been upended in flooding and landslides that have killed at least 1,400 people in Indonesia, Sri Lanka, and Thailand. Disaster management officials in Indonesia say more than 800 have died and about 500 remain missing. Some areas are still isolated in Sumatra after roads and bridges were cut off. People are suffering from shortages of basic necessities. Officials at an air base in the city of Medan are rushing to deliver supplies to areas inaccessible by land. Planes and helicopters are being dispatched with supplies to badly hit areas in North Sumatra and Aceh. For areas without landing strips, boxes are being dropped in by parachute. Officials are concerned unstable weather may hinder their operations. Heavy rain has also pummeled Sri Lanka and Thailand. In Sri Lanka, more than 470 people have been confirmed dead and at least 170 in Thailand. Communities in flooded areas are facing huge economic losses. Many residences and commercial centers were washed away by heavy rain that's pounded southern Thailand since November. The Thai government says damage caused by the disaster is estimated at 500 billion baht, about $15.7 billion. Major Japanese companies have filed lawsuits over U.S. President Trump's tariffs. The firms are demanding refunds if the U.S. Supreme Court rules the levies are illegal. The companies include Sumitomo Chemical, Toyota Tsusho, and Ricoh. The U.S. affiliates of the firms have filed suits with the U.S. Court of International Trade. The firms are seeking a declaration that the duties are unlawful. They're also asking for a full refund from the U.S. government if the tariffs are ruled illegal. In August, a U.S. appeals court upheld a lower court's decision and ruled many of Trump's sweeping tariffs are illegal and void. It said the president had exceeded his authority. Major U.S. retailer Costco has filed a similar lawsuit demanding a full refund. Chinese President Xi Jinping has urged his French counterpart Emmanuel Macron to support China's core interests. Xi was apparently referring to Beijing's stance on Taiwan. The leaders held talks in the Chinese capital on Thursday. The French president began his 3-day visit to China the day before. After the meeting, Xi said that their nations should support each other.
Regardless of changes in the external environment, both sides should consistently demonstrate the independence and strategic vision of a great power and strive to understand and support each other on issues related to their core interests and major concerns.
Xi's comment appears to be part of China's campaign against remarks by Japanese Prime Minister Takaichi Sanae. Last month, Takaichi said in the Diet, a possible Taiwan emergency involving the use of force could be considered a situation threatening Japan's survival. China's foreign minister called the remarks erroneous in a meeting with his French counterpart on Wednesday. Xi and Macron also exchanged views on the situation in Ukraine. Xi noted China supports every effort aimed at achieving peace. Macron urged Xi to work with him to secure a ceasefire between Russia and Ukraine.
Ukrainian media outlets say the country's forces attacked two tankers in the Black Sea, believed to be part of Russia's Shadow Fleet. The group of ships carry Russian crude oil to bypass international sanctions. Footage provided by Ukraine's security service shows a naval drone hitting a tanker and causing a massive explosion and intense fire. The Turkish government said on Friday that the explosions occurred one after another off the Turkish coast. It said all the crew members safely evacuated. Ukrainian media reports said the security service struck the tankers with naval drones in a joint operation with the Ukrainian Navy. The report said they were en route to a port in southern Russia. The Turkish Foreign Ministry said the explosions occurred within Turkey's exclusive economic zone. It said the incident posed serious risks to the safety of navigation, life, property, and the environment of the region.
A Swedish think tank says the world's top weapons makers posted a record combined revenue last year. It says this was primarily driven by rising geopolitical tensions around the world. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute released a report Monday on the 100 largest arms producers and military service firms of 2024. It says their total revenue increased by 5.9% to $679 billion. 39 are based in the United States, including Lockheed Martin, which tops the list. They account for about half of the total revenue. 8 firms based in China are included. Their sales declined from the year before, but they had the second largest share of the total revenue. Mitsubishi Heavy Industries, Kawasaki Heavy Industries, Fujitsu, and 2 other companies from Japan are on the list. Their revenues surged 40% to $13.3 billion. The report says global arms sales soared in 2024 as the wars in Ukraine and Gaza, geopolitical tensions, and ever higher military expenditure boosted demand.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 9 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK may also be found at most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, France 24. A series of press reviews, starting with an article in The Guardian about Denmark instituting a night watch to ensure that Trump does not seize Greenland. Israeli papers respond to Netanyahu's request for a pardon. Trump calling Somalis garbage and ramping up deportations. Several press reviews and editorials on Putin visiting Modi in India. A quick look at the history of defense relations between the two countries. France 24.
Deepti, coming to an article this time from British Daily, The Guardian. They're reporting that Denmark has set up what they're calling a night watch to ensure that Donald Trump's declarations and movements don't involve Greenland.
Yeah, basically Denmark wants to make sure that he doesn't try and seize Greenland while they're sleeping. This is a Game of Thrones style night watch set up by the Danish Foreign Ministry, as reported by this Danish daily here, Politiken, this week. The idea being, as you said, to ensure that they are on top of all things Donald Trump, especially when it comes to his unpredictable statements, possibly actions on Greenland. Now, The Guardian explains that this night watch will be set up from 5 p.m. to 7 a.m. daily, and the Danish government and its departments will be briefed about Donald Trump's actions and statements, particularly on Greenland during this period. It sounds a bit whimsical, but it was actually implemented after Denmark's diplomatic row with Donald Trump earlier this year, because especially when he threatened to take control of Greenland. According to one defense analyst cited by The Guardian, the U.S.-Danish alliance is well and truly dead, at least under the Trump administration.
Now, next to the Israeli papers, they're reacting to Benjamin Netanyahu's pardon request over the weekend.
That's right. Different opinions here. For example, left-wing paper Haaretz says that the only sensible answer to Netanyahu's pardon request is a resounding no. And the article says that even though he's asking for pardon, he isn't willing to admit anything and continues to say that the cases against him were, quote, fabricated. And the paper says that his request is, quote, an aggressive act by someone who seeks to exploit the institution of the pardon and abolish justice. The Jerusalem Post, however, doesn't share the same opinion. It says pardoning Netanyahu is an imperfect but necessary end to the PM's long legal saga. The opinion piece says that the deeper question is what prolonging the trial is actually going to do to the country. And it says that ending it might finally allow Israel to move on. The Jerusalem Post then says that it's time to close the chapter, not for Netanyahu, but for the whole country.
Well, moving across to the United States, where President Donald Trump has once again lashed out at immigrants in the country.
That's right. The Washington Post here says that he used dehumanizing language, calling Somalis garbage. Trump also said that he doesn't want them in our country and accused Somalis of, quote, having ripped off Minnesota. And the attacks come after reports of extensive fraud in Minnesota's social service system, where dozens of Somalis are accused of stealing millions in funds over the past years. The Guardian says that Trump's attacks are a xenophobic rant and reported that the president is ramping up the deportation efforts in the United States. And CBC News here reported that right after Trump's verbal attacks, his administration decided to pause all immigration applications from 19 non-European countries, including Afghanistan and Somalia.
We're going to go back to Vladimir Putin's visit to India starting today. A lot of attention in the Indian press, Dipti.
Yeah, that's right. Vladimir Putin arrives in Delhi this Thursday for a two-day bilateral summit with his counterpart Narendra Modi. It's his first visit or first participation in such a summit since the invasion of Ukraine in 2022. And to give you an idea of the fervor around Putin's visit, this is a front-page ad taken out by the Federation of Indian Chambers of Commerce for the Financial Express, an Indian business paper. And as you can see there, the Indian industry welcomes Mr. Vladimir Putin. The ad says here, India and Russia sharing growth through stronger trade. Now, the Hindu Business Line, another Indian paper, offers us this front page here. Putin to address India's trade gap while securing key deals. And the paper outlining what it calls a shopping list of topics and trade deals to be made, including pharma, medical devices and automobiles, but also Su-57 fighters. These are all products that Russia may purchase from India. While you have this editorial from the Hindustan Times today, the editors of the paper say that two topics will dominate the summit, defense deals and hydrocarbons. Now, the editors of the Hindustan Times here in this editorial look at what they call a new deal for India-Russia ties, urging the Indian government to use Putin's visit to push for more access within the Russian market. Currently, it says India is blocked by what it calls a piecemeal access to a handful of Russian sectors. A solid and wide-ranging trade basket will add further depth to this bilateral relationship and take it beyond just.
More widely, the visit's largely symbolic in terms of geopolitical relations.
Yeah, that's exactly what this website here, First Post, says in this article here. It looks at a history of defense relations between India and Russia. And it says that this visit sends a, quote, powerful message to the world, especially the U.S., which thought it could coerce India to abandon Russia by imposing punitive tariffs for purchasing Russian crude. There's also interesting analysis from Foreign Affairs here. The India that Trump made, how American bullying is shaping Indian foreign policy. And in this analysis, the magazine says that Donald Trump's departure from India-friendly politics this year, for instance, he imposed 50% tariffs and agreed to a raft of deals with India's rival Pakistan. It's all of this has really pushed India to form to a form of multi-alignment, building stronger ties with many countries, even when these countries have contradictory interests. And finally on this section, this from the Russian press, this headline reads, Russia invites India to throw off its Western shackles. So we really see how the Russian press are viewing this visit.
Those press reviews were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. Also most podcast sites. On to Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, an interview with Christopher Sabatini, Latin American senior fellow at Chatham House in London, about whether the U.S. will carry out a ground invasion in Venezuela. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Venezuela's leader, Nicolas Maduro, has commented on his recent phone call with Donald Trump, calling it respectful and cordial. Trump said on Sunday that he had spoken to Maduro, but he didn't reveal any details. Now, the call came after a significant buildup of U.S. military forces in the Caribbean and Trump's warning that any country linked to the drug trade could be subject to attack. Let's talk about Venezuela now with Christopher Sabatini, Senior Research Fellow for Latin America, U.S. and the Americas Program at the Chatham House think tank in London. Welcome to DW. Great to have you on the program. Given the military buildup that we're seeing here, do you think that Washington is planning a military intervention in Venezuela anytime soon?
I suspect there will be an intervention of some sort. An invasion is unlikely for the same reason your report just said. It requires many more troops than those that are parked off the coast of Venezuela. And Trump simply does not have the stomach or patience for what he called in 2016 these forever wars or state-building wars. And that's what would be required here. What I think he's hoping to do and was hoping to do 20 weeks ago when he started this was trying to show a force, rattle the saber a little bit, and then attempt to frighten the military into doing what he wants to do, which is remove Maduro. He was arguing this was largely a narco-terrorist organization, the government, and that was sort of a legitimate target for U.S. intervention and U.S. military strikes. But clearly he's shown recently that this is really about regime change. It's really about removing Maduro. As he indicated in his phone call, in discussing his phone call with Nicolas Maduro, he wants him to go. Now, the question is a show of force just off the coast of Venezuela sufficient to spark the military defection, or are his calls with Nicolas Maduro sufficient to convince Nicolas Maduro to leave? But in either event, it's unlikely to provoke the sort of democratic transition that he and his Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, seem to aspire to, along with the democratic opposition in Venezuela.
So President Maduro described this phone call with Donald Trump as respectful and cordial, and he said he hoped the call would be a step towards what he called respectful dialogue. Well, what do you see Maduro's strategy as being here?
Right now, I think Maduro's strategy is to wait it out. You know, I think with pressure building the United States in opposition to this military buildup, and now even more in opposition to the boat strikes that it seems, well, we already knew they were quite likely in violation of international law. There have been 21 boat strikes that have killed over 80 people. Most people argue that those were in violation of international law concerning the laws of war. But now recently it's been revealed that not only did the first missile actually that took out a boat, then was followed up with a series of three other missiles to take out the survivors. There's really serious fear that this is not just in violation of the laws of war, but in the violation of U.S. military conduct. So now we're seeing Republicans beginning to raise very serious questions about what is at stake here and what are the Trump objectives. And for that reason, I think it's going to be difficult for Nicolas Maduro to sort of negotiate his own exit, because right now, quite frankly, Donald Trump is on the back foot. And I think there's serious questions. So if I were Nicolas Maduro, and thank God I'm not, I would be waiting this out. And I think what we're seeing is the likelihood of a very full-fledged military attack. An invasion would never happen. But I think always on the table were a series of missile or drone strikes against selected targets, including maybe even taking out Nicolas Maduro and some of his inner circle. Mm-hmm. I think that was always on the table. Now I think this is, the likelihood is decreasing as political questions and even pressure is beginning to mount on Trump. So I think in the scale of escalation, what we'll see is more on the minor side. If Trump decides to go in and take out individual military targets, they will be more focused on military targets and drug sites. Now, Venezuela doesn't produce cocaine, but the drug sites what he'd be talking about and targeting would be airstrips and warehouses where that cocaine is trans-shipped from Colombia.
Christopher Zappatini from the Chatham House think tank. We'll have to leave it there, but thank you so much for joining us.
That interview analysis was from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. If you have questions or comments about the Shortwave Report or could help support this show, like a continuing supporter in Ukiah, California did this week, PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. I am truly grateful for donations, which are essential for the weekly production and distribution of this show, which I supply freely to more than 100 radio stations around the world. And if you are listening on the public radio station, please support them as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. Colombian President Petro has firmly rejected Trump's order to close Venezuelan airspace. Venezuelan President Maduro spoke about the psychological warfare and aggression the U.S. is leveling against his people. Trump pardoned the former Honduran President Hernandez, who was found guilty of being a cocaine kingpin and has been trying to influence the current election in Honduras, which has not been decided by airtime. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Gustavo Petro, in his capacity as President of Colombia and of the Community of Latin American and Caribbean States, CELAC, has firmly rejected the order issued by his U.S. counterpart, Donald Trump, to close Venezuelan airspace. He said, "I want to know under what rule of international law can a president of one country close the airspace of another country?" The Colombian head of state said in a message posted on the official Twitter account, or now called X, "If such a plan exists, I apologize for my boldness. But if it doesn't exist, and the ICAO, the International Civil Aviation Organization, is failing at this moment, I will tell the world that a foreign president cannot close the national airspace of another country." The concept of national sovereignty and the concept of international law have been developed. On Saturday, President Donald Trump used his social media platform, Truth Social, to announce the total closure of airspace over and around Venezuela, intensifying the tensions between the region and in the U.S. military presence growing rapidly. Trump urged all airlines to consider Venezuelan airspace completely closed, ostensibly targeting airlines, and he said drug traffickers and human traffickers. The statement comes as Washington reinforces its military deployment in the Caribbean under the pretext of fighting drug trafficking and alleged threats to regional security. In response, the government of Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro denounced and condemned the U.S. threats against its airspace and stated that they are not violating any laws and that they instead are being violated and the national sovereignty of Venezuela is being violated. And Colombian President Gustavo Petro has firmly rejected that order, saying, "What rule of international law can the president of one country close the airspace of another country?" Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro addressed the intense psychological warfare the country has experienced in recent months amidst the multifaceted aggression launched by the U.S. government, led by Donald Trump. He said, "We have lived through 22 weeks of aggression that can be described as psychological terrorism." The Venezuelan president said in his address from the Miraflores complex in Caracas, where he received the Comprehensive Bolivarian Community Commandos following a massive march held as part of their awarding ceremony. "Peace and national unity reign in Venezuela," he said. And he noticed that the people are organized, prepared to continue winning peace by building the nation during the coordinated march to swear in the community commands as initiatives that have transformed into massive mobilization in the streets of Caracas. The Venezuelan president said that for 22 weeks, the people have been mobilized and the people are going to the barracks where new militia are being enlisted because there is where the people can and where the nation grows. During this period, popular military and police exercises have been carried out in defense capacity like never before, aimed at defending sovereignty and guaranteeing stability for future generations. The Venezuelan president said that the threats from the United States have not succeeded in derailing Venezuela. They will never derail us from the path of building the powerful nation that this people deserves. The people responded with chants of not wanting to be a colony and declaring their desire to be a Latin American power. This measure comes in addition to the significant military deployment in the Caribbean Sea, where the U.S. military has stationed a strike group composed of the aircraft carrier Gerald R. Ford, a nuclear submarine, and more than 16,000 troops. U.S. President Donald Trump says he will pardon Honduras' former president, who was sentenced by a U.S. court just last year to 45 years in prison for directing a massive cocaine trafficking operation. Prosecutors showed how Juan Orlando Hernandez, who was a president from 2014 to 2022 in Honduras, ran the country as a narco state, accepting millions of dollars in bribes from cocaine traffickers in exchange for protection, including deploying the Honduran National Police to safeguard cocaine loads as they were transported through Honduras. News of Trump's looming pardon came just days ahead of Sunday's presidential elections in Honduras, where a right-wing candidate from Juan Orlando Hernandez's party has taken a narrow lead with just under half the votes counted. Nasri Asfira is the former mayor of Tegucigalpa. He received a boost when Trump endorsed him and threatened to cut off aid to Honduras if voters didn't elect him.
Those reports were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there are no podcasts. And in fact, this week there's been some problems. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6060 or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can listen to past shows and find information for online support. There's a link there at my website along with a podcast link. And get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. I'm still recuperating from a spinal injury and staying in a house connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.